Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of Global Gaming Business, and this week we meet with Satoshi Sakamoto and Steve Sutherland, the two top executives with Konami Gaming. For many years, Konami Gaming has been and also ran in the slot manufacturer's field. Decent games kept the company afloat, but it lagged behind technologically. Several years ago, Sakamoto and Sutherland instituted a complete overhaul of the company that has resulted in new system technology, groundbreaking platforms, and most importantly, games that have achieved much success on the casino floor. They met with me and editor Frank Legato at their offices in Las Vegas in September.
Thank you for being with us today, sir.
Thank you very much to come here.
I'd like to start out with a little background, because Konami was historically an amusement game manufacturer, one of the most successful. Can you tell us how it initially got into the gaming market?
About 1995, Konami started involving gaming market. Konami supplied some amusement horse race machine to one of the gaming company, and since then they have involving for gaming market. Then they are interesting to go to the slot machine market of gaming in 1996. So end of 1996, Konami decided to enter the gaming market in Australia. Then after that, they starting to USA.
And how important is the U.S. casino market to Konami's overall business?
These days, a lot of American operators going to overseas. So U.S. market is very important for Konami business. And also, Konami have three divisions. One is a consumer digital entertainment division, which is consumer software or amusement or card game. And the second one is a sports fitness club. They have more than 300 fitness clubs all over the Japan. And the third one is a gaming and systems division. And the reason they put division for gaming, because they think that's very important for future. Mm-hmm. So they can cover children, adult, fitness, or health thing or entertainment. I think they like to cover this sort of area.
Now, has the gaming side of it increased significantly over the past few years?
U.S. operation, yes, it is.
And how has the company's traditional pachinko amusement game business translated over to the gaming side? Do you feel the company's inherent strength of amusement games gives it a competitive advantage?
Well, first of all, we didn't put the pachinko and amusement together. We amusement is the one belong to digital entertainment, but pachinko business is still just a study part, exercise part. So we didn't put as a division, so totally separate. So amusement division, digital entertainment division, which having amusement is very successful, and these days they're doing. We call e-amusement. They have all online and the online game, and they are very successful. So when we do the business, we didn't have so much technology at the beginning because we have to catch up other competitors fast. But I think since last year, we start talking to our amusement department, and we start a kind of mixture of technology or entertainment essence to the gaming machine.
Do you think the pachinko business is related very much to the slot machine business? Are there parallels there? Are there similar themes that you use?
We don't have anything yet. And I think if we said it related, maybe patent is the only one to relate it. But other than that, we don't involving pachinko development people.
So even like, for instance, the sale of the pachinko machines is not done the same way you would sell slot machines?
No. And also our account doesn't count as a gaming and system division. Other company does, but we don't.
Okay. Konami entered the U.S. market in 2000. How much sharing of research and development has there been between the parent company and Konami Gaming, the U.S. subsidiary?
Okay, our parent company has some research and development in the Zama area, which is near Yokohama. And we have about 50 people working for research. But when our headquarters went to holding company, we take over that part. So we call Konami Gaming Inc. Japan branch.
When you first opened up here, it was largely your Australian product that you brought in.
Yes.
You then achieved much success with more localized game development. Is that completely independent now as far as the Nevada-based development of games?
Well, we still, you know, the Australian development and the American development and the Japanese, you know, development, we always talk together and share idea, information. Always, you know, we have to be careful for transfer price. So we are always studying based on transfer price issue.
Now, can you tell us some of the key factors that going forward that are going to be important for Konami as you move forward in this slot market and others around the world?
Well, I think one thing is that we have to follow the industry movement, especially IT, like G2S or S2S, and also server-based game. We have to follow this sort of a trend. And secondly, we have to do more entertainment essence put into the slot machine. So this part, we like to use our headquarters technology or know-how about entertainment. So I think we go two way. That's the most important. One way is to follow the technology. Secondly, more entertainment.
Now you're branching out as far as the types of slot machines that you're introducing in the market. The K2V, the video platform, was just a major success. Mm-hmm. Really turned your company around, and now you have the stepper as well. Mm-hmm. Is there going to be a push forward on both fronts now? You're sharing the same format, I think.
Yeah, I think studying always on the future. I think that you can ask our people, R&D guy, but we always looking something new.
The Global Gaming Expo this year, yes. How important is that among all the trade shows?
Well, I just come back from Austin show. It's getting smaller and smaller, unfortunately. And also there was a Macau show, so many shows. But if you look, I think G2E is the most important for us. And also a lot of visitor coming. I think every competitor, every related people was attention to G2E, I believe. So we put the most updated product and offer information to G2E.
How important is the Asian market to Konami? Obviously, you're in Australia in a major way, but how are you being successful in Macau right now?
I think always market. For us, market is important because as long as customers, they are very important. But talking about Macau, I think Macau is a little bit different because as a slot machine manufacturer, we didn't sell so many machines in Macau. And because Macau market more likely table game, so we didn't go. And also, we didn't give big exposure. We didn't set up a branch. Well, we didn't. So, but Philippines or maybe Singapore is the next wave. So we're looking for this market because this market is more slot machine orientated, casino.
Are you developing Asian themed machines for these markets?
I think a lot of manufacturers now, especially video,
yes,
they're looking for a Chinese character, Chinese good luck.
Right.
So, of course, we have to do that,
right.
Yes.
Now, how about systems? Is that as strong in other parts of the world as it is becoming here in the United States?
Yeah, I think our system was very much accepted to the customer, and we have a deal with a large ocean company called TAPCOP. So our system installation will be coming soon. So that's a big step to overseas system market. But most important, we have to make sure our infrastructure of Australian operation is good enough for cope with this big customer. So I think right now, Australian office, we gear up the system business, so then we can cope with TAPCOP installation. Then we can step a little bit more for other customer.
Where do you see your company in, say, 5 years with respect to the other major slot manufacturers?
Well, it's the same question come from the shareholder. And, well, we wish always, you know, like to grow and a certain market share. But, of course, always, you know, the competitors there. So I think it's going to be step by step. And also this office getting smaller. So we have to expand some office. So always infrastructure, then expand infrastructure. That's the order. Because if we do without infrastructure, then we will lose the service, proper service. So we always make sure we can have a proper facility and proper service to the customer.
I just have one more question. It's
yes.
Really not related to your company, but more to your country. There's a lot of talk about gaming being legalized in Japan.
Yes.
Are you involved in that? Are you talking to some of the ministers in the government to explain what gaming is about in case they don't really understand it?
We're not involving direct. Mm-hmm. They tried to involving us, especially myself, because there was no Japanese understanding proper gaming operation. But I always in overseas. I think this week there was a Japan Gaming Expo.
Yes.
We didn't join because first of all, the gaming business model, they have to make the regulation fast. If no regulation, we have no idea what they're going to do.
Right.
There was a lot of rumor the bill will put in the parliament in early next year, but the current political situation, you know, the upper house of a Democrat and lower house is like Republican, liberal.
Right.
So any bill doesn't go, any bill always reject either one. And it's possible. Recently, Prime Minister resigned, very short. And I think election of a lower house coming.
Yes.
So once this one passed and which one win, if we know still same situation,
right.
I don't think they go through.
Right.
If the liberal win, maybe chance. But because mainly liberal party was the one to promoting the casino. But if still same situation, like upper house was Democrat and lower house liberal, I think nothing happened.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Steve Sullivan, thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. It's great to finally catch up with you and talk about what's going on with your company. Really impressive things you've come out with the last few years, and I understand G2E will be a real seminal moment for the company. Let's start, obviously, you're head of the U.S. division. How important is the U.S. division to the overall health of Konami?
When you take a look at the Konami Gaming unit within Konami Corporation, it's a very strategic importance to the parent company. It's a major growth market that they're looking to definitely make a major play in the marketplace. Right now, I think within the industry, we're considered very much a tertiary player today.
Right.
However, recognized with some outstanding product as to where we set today. Strategically within the company, I guess the best way to take a look at it, we're just coming off the Olympics, we want to be on the podium. You know, we want to be number one, number two, or number three. We are following a strategic plan to achieve that. We can see it in our most recent product introductions here over the past few years through our game development area and also in our systems arena. So, we are executing to a strategy to achieve that. So from a parent company standpoint and the communications to us, it's very critical. As we take a look at Konami's revenues this last fiscal year, we were at $185 million. That's worldwide. How do we get those revenues to $250 million? How do we get it to a half a billion? And how do we get them to $1 billion? If you review the Konami corporate financials, et cetera, you'll see that the consumer software division, or what we call Konami Digital Entertainment, which of course is a consumer software, which everybody knows Konami for, and I think they think we're the same. But you have the digital entertainment that has consumer software, amusement, the Yu-Gi-Oh! Card games and other toy and hobby business and other online components. That's a billion-plus dollar entity. That did not happen overnight. There were small investments in that arena. That was the foundation of Konami. Today, it's a billion-plus dollar revenue driver. Very similarly, with the sports and life fitness business, small investment. Today, that division's just under $1 billion. But I really think we have to start taking a look as a company from the Konami Corporation's gaming and systems business. That Australia, Konami Australia, we have manufacturing, we have engineering, we have distribution services there. Likewise, we have that here in the U.S. How do we best utilize those resources to achieve the podium? So from my perspective, KAP can be more of a financial reporting entity, the same with KGI, but how do we utilize those resources and KGI Japan, that's another engineering resource, to make sure that we achieve that, that, you know, we're one of the top three players in the industry. I believe we will get there.
Do you think R&D sharing is key to this effort? I mean, between the various teams, you have various teams around the world now. How are they going to be interrelated?
When we take a look at the business that we're in today as a manufacturer, it's engineering first, followed by all the other distribution services, et cetera. Engineering first is first and foremost in our mind, and the utilization of those worldwide resources is key to our long-term success. Approximately 3 years ago, on the game side, we had invested in a very high-level executive from the technology industry. He knew nothing about the gaming industry whatsoever. But he was a proven engineering manager in the high-tech industry. We knew he could learn this industry, but we were looking for him to build an organization, to put the processes in place to ensure that we could get the timely delivery of product in the marketplace. But more importantly, I think as we take a look as manufacturers in our industry, too many of the manufacturers historically in the past is they've taken looked at game design more of an art. We look at it more of a science. We were originally in that art form. We are now more into the scientific component of that, that it's very analytical and very scientific what we do. So it's no longer just leaving it up to a general game designer that he's going to go try this. There's some proven principles out there. Apply those to the games. Tweak that. But more importantly, once they get on the casino floors, make sure that we fully analyze those. So we went out and we secured test sites with key casino operators. We requested specific data back. I know they were providing the specific information back to us, but we wanted more. We wanted more information out of that. Why does the patron like that game? What are the various components of those pay tables, okay, that really drive the players? Getting more information on the graphics, the arts, the colors, etc. So we're using that day in and day out. And I think you gentlemen have been in the business for quite some time, and I think through the first 4 to 5 years, we were just kind of, I hate to say this, throwing games up on the wall, see what stuck with the patrons. If we took a look at our game performance graphs at that point in time, maybe 25 to 30% of our games had a level of legs. Over the past 3 years, what we've seen is a switch in that, where 30% of the games going out don't have any level of legs, they're dogs, but 70% of them we're starting to see are over house average. And out of that, we're starting to determine legs. So we're going to continue to refine that process, more of an analytical, very objective process, take the subjectivity out of it, and move forward as a company. And we apply that same process on the system side also.
I talked to one or two of your customers, and the impression I get is the K2V platform, the introduction of that platform, was really the turning point for your games. Do you agree, and what do you think the biggest advantage of that platform
right.
is?
Two key turning points. As we just discussed, the introduction of an engineering manager that could foster a creative development environment. When we introduced the K2V platform, it replaced our older IM 1.5 platform. It had the smaller screen on the machine. The product was definitely looking old. Also, the game engine or the electronics behind it only allowed a limited amount of game development. We couldn't take the game development that much further. With a K2V platform, of course, we had a larger footprint viewing area, you know, for our patrons in the field. And then applying the engineering techniques that were coming in through the new engineering management, we finally hit upon a formula for success. So the platform and the engineering behind it allows us to develop to where we want to go. More importantly, I think it's the game content that's coming out there, because we release new platforms every 3 to 5 years. It's kind of traditional in the industry. You need to make sure that's there, but I'm most proud of that our engineering team has been aligned to develop key product. And I think you've also seen over the past few years is when we launched as a company, we had to be a Me Too company. Our competition had video product. We had video product. Maybe we had better graphics, but maybe our game components weren't driving the net win that the casinos expected. We had stepper product. Our competition had stepper product. So we were a Me Too company. As we take a look, though, there was a couple components that were introduced here over the past few years. We had our connection series. We had scatter reels. It was starting to bring in somewhat of Konami, starting to establish a limited Konami brand, Konami uniqueness. So people have asked, when is Konami going to be Konami? Up until about 2 years ago, when we really turned the corner from a development and a profitability standpoint, we had to be the tried and true gaming company, just like everybody else in the industry. Now that we're very successful, we're taking a lot of those R&D dollars and we're investing in the Konami unique. And I think we'll demonstrate some of those items in a very private area at the upcoming G2E show, and we'll invite you gentlemen in also. It's unfortunate we don't have all the patents filed today, but we will have minimally one product in that room that is new to the industry, that is Konami, but you will see other things coming forward, even as it relates to multi-station devices that kind of draws upon some of our expertise in the amusement arena, you know, in Japan, that to drive other unique products and for what Konami is really known for is an entertainment company worldwide.
Are these new products being accepted more in, let's say, the newer gaming jurisdictions than the established ones, or is it pretty much across the board?
The products, the K2V video platform, has been accepted by all jurisdictions openly. The Advantage 5 platform also has been widely accepted across all jurisdictions. The component that that I find amazing is that we've been making an entry into South America here over the past 6 months. Our development plan was focused on the video platform. The operators in South America have strictly been asking for what they want is the Advantage 5 platform. So the success of that platform, you know, has, you know, crossed the borders into South America. We are getting the same input from Europe. We're getting some of the same input from Macau that there's interest that they want to try something there. We know that's not a major, you know, machine market at this time. So, you know, we're benefiting from that, from both platforms. I think where Konami is today, I believe that our product performance warrants greater purchases by the casino industry, but I believe the industry still hesitates somewhat. I think we maybe have another year or two where we have to prove ourselves, and I think that we'll definitely start seeing those greater purchases. We have recently seen on some of the newer casino openings, major expansions, where people are willing to step up to 100, maybe 200 games of Konami on the floor, where typically we've been below 25 and at times 50. We're now in that 100 to 200 unit category, so I think people understand that Konami's here to stay, where beforehand I believe they thought we were going to be like a Sigma or a Universal and leave the market. I believe the building that we're setting in is a demonstration to the commitment to the marketplace, and likewise in Australia, if you saw the facility there, it's a long-term commitment.
Okay. Let's talk about your system business, the KCMS. I believe it's a couple of hundred casinos now. Is that correct?
We're setting at today approximately 100 installations in the field. I'd have to ask my systems group exactly where we set, but I believe we're setting somewhere around 100 installs.
Well, interestingly, the one systems customer of yours that I talked to said basically the same thing that you've told us today, that he liked the Konami system because it started with engineering, and then it put the marketing on top of the engineering approach, where the other one started with the marketing and then tried to engineer according to the marketing.
Let me maybe rephrase that in a different manner. My background coming from the high-tech industry, we've had the opportunity here at Konami to build a system upon the right infrastructure. I believe there's been a number of very major mistakes by our competitors on the hardware and network infrastructure upon which they've built their system. So I believe that any implementation should be built upon the right hardware and network infrastructure. If we take a look at the KCMS platform, we wanted to ensure that it was TCP/IP computer-based, that it had an Ethernet network. We utilized mainline servers. This is not a Dell, Hewlett-Packard type of application. When we did the review of the casino industry, if we take a look at the volume of transactions, and you want to draw an analogy in other industries, you have to go to the banking industry. The banking industry is the only other type of industry above and beyond the internet that has the volume of transactions that our industry experiences day in and day out. So based on that, another decision was made that on the back end, it had to have a very large-scale database, something like Oracle, which we ultimately went with. Why Oracle, or a very large-scale database? It's because of the robustness, the reliability of that database, and a number of things that they do automatically that reduces the necessity to have key people on your IT staff, because something like Oracle does it automatically. So in effect, what I'm saying is we adopted a Fortune 100 company architecture, and that was key to our decision-making process. We are authorized by our parent company to go acquire any systems company. It was a make-or-buy decision, so we're taking a look at the buys. We reviewed every systems company out there. It did not have the architectural requirements that we required. On top of that, once you have the proper architecture, we felt we could build the appropriate applications. But another decision was made that because of the sophistication of the level that we were adopting, we needed very high-tech development resource. So the majority of the resources that developed that product line were not from the gaming industry also. They were also very difficult to secure here because those assets aren't readily available here. They're in pockets around the country. Of course, they're in Silicon Valley, they're San Diego, Minneapolis. Las Vegas is a technology utilizer. It's not a technology industry in and of itself. So on top of that, we had to bring in, because our system, of course, it's a naked network. It's got to have applications on it. We have the developers. So we had to go find the industry experts. Then we had to hire product management people that could write the functional specs. to give to those developers to develop the applications that we felt were necessary in the industry. So, once again, a strategy that we followed along that end that has built our business to where it is today. The head of the systems group is recognized in the high-tech industry. He's another expert in his arena, Tom Sukup. He's very, very highly recognized in a number of different areas. And today, just like our head of game engineering, our systems engineering, I would put up against our competition, you know, in any of the panels or sessions that are here. And I believe today they know our industry as well as the competition. They may not have the relationships, but they can do that. The other thing that I've noticed here over the past 3 years, those companies that are truly interested in doing a detailed systems analysis and making a decision not based on relationships or what they've utilized in the past, every one of those companies that has done that detailed analysis compared to our competition has selected KCMS over the competition time and time again.
You're introducing a new module for KCMS at G2E that addresses the integration of non-gaming spend by patrons. Can you tell us a little bit about that product?
Yes, absolutely. At last year's gaming show, we made an acquisition of a small CRM company called Mindset. When we made that decision was strategic also. We understood that we needed to be in the CRM space as some of our competitors were. We needed to have the market segmentation. We needed to do campaign management. We had to be able to review those campaigns. But just to expose here on the forefront here, strategically, the reason for the acquisition was to really get to what is the true value of the patron in the casino. We know that in a number of casino properties that casino revenues are down to maybe 50% of the overall revenues. The balance of the revenues are being driven through the property management of the hotels, the restaurants, the shows, their golf courses, their retail, etc. So we really need, the determination was, is we really had to identify what is true patron worth. What is the value of that patron from the property management side? What is the value of that patron from the retail side? What is the worth of that patron from their restaurant business, etc.? The gaming industry has transitioned over the past decade where that you have a number of patrons that come to casinos that don't gamble. I happen to know of certain patrons that will gamble very significantly at their home casino, but when they come here to Las Vegas and they're staying at some of these major properties, they are bringing 5 to 10 other couples along with them. Those people may be gambling, but these people I know, they're not on the casino floor here. They're in the retail shopping centers. They're in the restaurants. They're on the golf courses. What is the value of that patron that's a high-volume player in another state, let's say out of Nevada, but when they come here, what's their value for bringing those other 10 people that they're paying for? How do you tie in the value of those patrons or their friends that are down on the floor gambling? How do you tie in the value of those dinners where they're paying for those 12 to 14 people? Or the shopping experience. There's a shopping experience with one person I know extremely well. It's actually a family member that did a number of their Christmas and charitable Christmas shopping at a major retail center here in town. They're not getting points for that. Likewise, they weren't even recognized as being on property because their personal assistants made that reservation for them. If they had made it themselves, they probably would have gotten recognition. I don't believe the property understood that they were on site. Actually, I know they didn't.
So this system you're putting in place will be able to account for all those people that may not be at the gambling table, but will be, you know, shopping and eating and using all the other amenities on the property.
Exactly. And today, in working with consultants and industry experts, we're trying to define those algorithms to really determine what that true patron worth. I think the industry's refined the gaming client, okay, but I believe the gaming client's transition, as we've seen over the years with, you know, these investments from, you know, a couple hundred million dollars to multi-billion dollar properties, okay, that gaming patron, I think, is also changing. He's investing more in his restaurant experience, his entertainment experience. But what about those patrons that don't gamble? Okay, let's capture those also. So it's defining those algorithms and working with the industry experts. Our industry evolves, so I'm sure these algorithms will evolve also.
You mentioned some of these new products you're going to be introducing at G2E in the private room. Do you consider these pretty much revolutionary products, things that haven't been done in the gaming industry in the past?
One of the products, I believe, would be classified as revolutionary, at least from our perspective. It's very, very creative. It's unique. It will fit in a slot stand. Our competition does not have it. So from that standpoint, it's unique. It is very Konami. I believe you will see some of the components that you've seen are Advantage 5 with the lighting, et cetera. But the rest of, you know, the patron display area is going to be very unique. Unfortunately, I wish I could show it to you today and allow you to take photos, etc. Unfortunately, we're going through final patent submissions, and I don't believe that's going to take another 30 to 60 days to get that done. But I'll make sure that you get a preview of that product well before the show. I'd like you to see it before the operators. On the other side, next year we will release a new video platform. It's a replacement for our current video platform. It will be released next summer. We have to get this through all the regulatory approvals, etc. Once again, there's a number of patents that we're filing in this arena, so I'll make sure that you see that platform also. But the one thing that we have done is a company, for the first time, we went out and we secured one of the top industrial design firms in the country. We had that industrial design firm go interview not only Konami personnel, but a number of casino executives, a number of casino patrons, actually more importantly, the casino patron. And then what we felt were some of our key partners from the third-party standpoint that have a close association with us and that have been key drivers or supporters of Konami. We have that product coming to market. We want to demonstrate that at the G2E show. We have to make a decision. Are we going to show it on the general floor to give the patrons a view into the future to all, you know, or all the casinos? Or are we going to put it in a private room? The decision I need to make is by showing it, is it going to shut off my current sales? I don't believe so because it's further out. But we're still in that mode where we can make some minor tweaks to it. But that effort, that product, is an effort that was led by our industrial design company, very independently, working with some key engineers, along with myself and Satoshi Sakamoto. And it was a worldwide effort, and we look to take that platform forward into the marketplace. Long term, that platform will also have a stronger game design engine, so we can take game design to the next level. Summarizing that platform, there's a number of ergonomic components that we put into consideration of that platform. We learned a lot of things from the patrons, et cetera, and things that they were asking for. And the industrial design firm just did an outstanding job of summarizing that so our engineering team can act on it. So throughout our entire internal design, once we got the initial design from the industrial design firm, you know, there was hundreds of items that they recommended, and we just went through and we picked the key components, and then they interfaced with us just to make sure that we were spot on, you know, with what they learned from the patrons. So as we get this, we'll go through the gaming show. We'll probably introduce it to a couple of those key patrons because we still have their names in the industry just to make sure, and then we'll finalize the product for release.
How many new games all told, are you going to launch at the Global Gaming Expo?
From a global gaming component, as it relates to new game titles, we do not hold off our game development for global gaming. But let me make a statement as to where Konami was, where we've been, and where we're going to from a game development standpoint. When Konami first launched product in the marketplace, for the first 2 years, we had six game titles. Up until we made the engineering change here about 3 years ago, the company was producing approximately 24 to 26 new titles a year. Over the past 2 years, we have been developing between 65 to 75 titles per year between the video and the stepper platforms. This year and going forward, we're going to reduce that slightly on the current video and stepper platforms. I'm not talking about the new platforms coming out. We're going to reduce that to probably 55 titles. The reason being is even though we're developing quality titles, we believe that we now understand game design development more so. We're looking to produce higher quality titles with longer legs, more features, etc. in the marketplace.
Do you have one product that's going to just be your wow product for players when it gets out into the field?
Right now, the wow product is the Advantage 5. The industry always adapts the newest, the latest, and the greatest. Key thing is make sure the salespeople don't forget about the video platform. So we do have new things coming out, you know, on the current K2V platform. We have a Sport of Kings progressive that was widely successful in Australia, Asia, etc. We're bringing that to the North American marketplace along with other key components. The Advantage 5 platform, we need to add additional progressive, you know, features with that. We will be, you know, definitely showing those. And then I think some of these new products that will probably be released next year, I think there's going to be some real wow factor there also.
Where does Konami stand in the server-based gaming arena? I mean, we've been hearing about this for 5 years now, and we know that there's some sort of system going in at City Center that IGT is producing, but how quickly do you think this is going to come on board, and are you prepared to be in that space?
Konami's definitely prepared to be in the server-based gaming arena. At the gaming show, we're going to have to come out and make a statement on our formal direction.
Right.
We've been in a very good position to basically be Switzerland or neutral to this point. The company has been actively developing the G2S protocols within the company, which allows for adoption of G2S. We have the opportunity of going the IGT route, we have the opportunity to go the Bally route, we have the opportunity to go the Konami route. The one thing I will say about Konami, there's a lot of discussions about server-based gaming, etc. Everybody wants to control the network. And I'd have to ask the industry the question, are some companies forgetting about what is the basis of our success? It's entertainment. It's driving entertainment. Okay, somebody can control the network, etc. We've got to drive entertainment. As it comes to server-based gaming, is the industry going to get there? Yes. I wish we would bypass this component of downloadable configuration control. Is it going to be an industry driver replacement cycle? I personally don't believe it's like the bill acceptors, the ticket printers, etc. I believe when the industry gets to true server-based gaming, it will drive that escalation cycle. That now drives the patron record, the system side, closer to the game component, where the patron has more control of the game. Some of it automatically, and I'll give you an example today, under what everybody is touting as server-based gaming today, which to me, I think they're using the wrong nomenclature. Yes, there's a server. It's download and it's configuration control. Server-based gaming to me is a thin client. You're streaming video to a device. But today, if a patron goes to a machine, the 10 games that are showing there, if none of those games are what he wants to play, and he puts his card in, yes, the game could ultimately download it, But is the patron going to wait for that download? Is the industry going to throw all that hardware after that? It's a significant investment to make that happen. The patron's really not in control of his experience. So if you take a look today, let's say there's a patron from Atlantic City. There happens to have a sister property here. If the game's not in the machine, he puts in his patron card. Can it happen that the game's reloaded? Yes, but it's not going to happen instantly. Let's talk about going into this true server-based environment where you have thin clients on the floor, where you're streaming video, you're streaming graphics, sound. The game plays actually back in the server room. That patron in Atlantic City comes to Las Vegas, sees a machine, it's not configured appropriately for what he likes. Let's say that game happens to be approved here in Nevada. He puts his card in. His game's instantly there. Now let's talk about game design and development. We'll pull something from the consumer software field. In the consumer software field, they have stage-based gaming. They go from stage one or through door one through door two. They have to earn their way through. We have something very similar called pay tables in our industry. A patron earns himself into pay table six. He comes from Missouri or Atlantic City into Las Vegas. The game's not configured with any of the games that he likes. However, the regulatory body allows this information to be transferred, etc. He puts his card in. The game instantly configures to the same session he had in Atlantic City or in Maryland Heights, Missouri, or wherever he happens to be. Those are the, you know, now you can see some of the benefits coming forth. True server-based gaming, I think the patron has more control because in that patron record, we now know what type of games, what type of volatility he plays. It gives the casino, or let the system to automatically offer other games or reconfigure based on things that we know about that patron. It's a ways before we see it. But one other comment about server-based gaming, and I'm going to draw an analogy to a food court. I believe a lot of people are looking at, is server-based gaming's going to be the future panacea for the entire industry? Is if we were to take a look at a casino floor very similar to food court, a lot of people are saying that we're just going to have the same box on the casino floor. If we were to look at a food court and somebody would walk in and just see McDonald's throughout the entire food court, there's 12 different operations, but they're all McDonald's or they're all KFC, it's very boring. So I think we're still going to need the individual creativity from the various manufacturers, from the box, the top box design, etc. So I think the industry needs to learn how to utilize this with all these server-based components. So I think we have a great forum going forward. The key component is how do all the manufacturers play together? Do they truly adopt the GSA standards? Do they implement them correctly and fully? Is I noticed today as we implement, switching over on the system side, implement our KCMS platform, the implementation of SaaS is not necessarily complete or always correct. So our industry, all of us, need to become very disciplined because without that discipline, we're still going to continue to have the same issues we have today with a SaaS-based floor.
You've got all these great things coming out now, but of course now we're in this economic downturn, certainly impacting the gaming industry. There's a lot of hunkering down in terms of let's utilize what we have and go from there. How are you going to convince casinos that are in that mode that it's to their benefit to buy some of these new products that you're offering?
Being in these recessionary times, I think is if I take a look. It's two-edged sword. It's somewhat of a curse to Konami because we have great product today that if we weren't in a recession, that they may take Konami to the podium today. So timing is everything. But on the other side, the positive side, if we didn't have these winning products, I think the company would be on very hard times at this point in time. So there is the benefit. Last year, year-over-year growth was outstanding. And I cannot say yet because we have not, released, our figures as of yet, through the parent company. Year over year compared to last year, we're up over last year. So from Konami's standpoint, we're benefiting from this strong game design. in an industry that's in a downturn mode. And what is happening there for the limited replacement cycle, Konami's just getting a greater share than some of our competitors. We're taken away from others, so we're growing in that manner. But as a company, we have seen that we've had to definitely offer more creative financing programs. It doesn't matter if it's a bucket sale or a straight-out financing, additional terms. We've seen a growth of our participation business, and participation has not been a key driver within Konami. Although we have a nice participation base, we're seeing certain casinos that, you know, want to operate more under the participation model. So we've had to be more creative in our day-to-day financing to make sure some of these transactions happen. So we give consideration to each and every transaction, but it's good, solid business judgment on each and every transaction. So I'd have to say, compared to last year and today, management watches the transactions, even though we watch them all closely, much more closely, particularly when it comes into the financing and the creativity that's requested by our sales force and our customers.
And in this environment, you have to be that much more flexible, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. And surprisingly enough, you know, some of the major corporations that in the past would just purchase product outright, they're looking for financing alternatives. So, yes, we have to be more creative. And particularly, you know, some of the key customers have stood behind us. You know, they've helped get us to where we're at, so we're very open to listening to what their needs are at this point in time.
Steve, we're sitting here in this beautiful building you have in Las Vegas, your American headquarters, and it strikes me as how far this company has come. I know when we started following your company, you were working out of a storefront, essentially, and now you've got this great building and a great manufacturing plant here as well. What does it mean to you to be finally on the verge of becoming one of the major players?
This is, to be on the verge, is a company, I believe all our employees, I know executive management's very proud of where we are today. Over the past 2 years, we've had outstanding returns, and we've been able to give back to our employees, which is very key to me. We have, you know, bonus programs for our employees, et cetera. The past 2 years, I mean, to me, when you hand out, you have that ability to hand out those bonus checks to those employees in May just based on our fiscal year close and auditing requirements, et cetera. To see those smiles on the employees' faces and for those employees to come up and thank us, where in turn I'm really thanking them, because all we're doing from an executive management standpoint is setting direction. So there's a lot of pride at where we are today. The one thing that I constantly remind a number of people in the company, we are not on the podium today. And when we are on the podium, we cannot become arrogant or complacent. I've seen a lot of that in the industry, and when I ultimately retire, I hope to retire from Konami. This is most likely, and I can pretty much guarantee my last foray in the gaming industry, maybe with the exception of a little consulting. But when I leave here, I want to see a company that has attained one of the top three positions in the industry. But the core components are here that those players that take on this job long-term will carry forward and not adopt the complacency or the arrogance that we've seen some people in our industry adopt. We need to stay away from that for this company to be successful long-term.
Well, Steve Sutherland, thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. Exciting time for your company, and we look forward to seeing your new products at G2E.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. If you want to learn more about this or any subject, visit our websites at ggvmagazine.com or casinoconnection.com. To stay in touch with the industry, subscribe to Global Gaming Business Weekly, the industry's only comprehensive electronic news magazine delivered to your desk every Monday morning. Download subscription forms at the Global Gaming Business website. For now, thanks for listening to the Global Gaming Business Podcast.